This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hi, I'm Kim Salmon. I'd like to have a quick word about public radio, particularly 3CR. The thing about public radio is that it's more open than the more formatted types of radio to what's going on around it. So when you listen to it, you're more likely to hear a reflection of real life, and 3CR being in the heart of Smith Street, Collingwood, is a particularly good example of what I'm talking about. If you'd like to subscribe, the number is 94198377.
You've been listening to the same. You could never understand.
The best routes are the ones you haven't ridden. You could pedal the same loops year after year. Many people do, literally and figuratively. But to grow, you need new rides. Risks. Turn down lanes you've long seen but never travelled. Get lost once or twice, then double back to where you started and try again. Live like this, and you come to see unknown territory not as threatening, but as intriguing. And that's from Mark Remy, 2001.
Well, we know where we're going, but we don't know where we've been. And we know what we're knowing, but we can't say what we've seen. And we're not little children, and we know what we want, and the future is certain. Give us time to work it out.
Righto, we've had enough time to work it out. You're listening to 3CR, Yarrabug Radio Show, Radical Radio 3CR, podcasting, streaming, or listening on the transistor in the kitchen. Many thanks to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! Always an insight into what's happening in America from an independent news group, not a mainstream group. We've got, I'm not sure whether to call this our six-monthly check-up with Bicycle Network. Where Alison Clark is joining us in the small peloton. Good morning, Faith.
Good morning, Val.
Good morning, Alison.
Good morning, Val.
And we're not on the road to nowhere, actually. We're quite focused about a few things today. We're going to tackle having a look at cargo bikes, electric bikes, what our willy-nilly regulations don't know what to do with things, and a couple of light-hearted moments as well. Look, Faith, why don't you break the ice? You've got a nice bike moment for us.
I do. I was in Sapporo last week for an unexpectedly extended holiday after a typhoon saw our flights cancelled. And there's some great riding around Sapporo. There's some shared paths along the rivers and heading either up into the mountains, down to the bay, to another river. So, and we've never had time to do that when we're there. So we jumped on, they have a share bike scheme, a little electric bikes in the city. And if you live there, you can subscribe and use them quite cheaply. If you don't live there, I think it's $16 for the whole day. You have from until midnight from whenever you start it. So we jumped on a couple of those. There are some businesses where you can hire bikes that might have fitted us better, but as this was a last-minute thing, we'd left it too late, and we thought, well, it would be fun to try these. Now, my husband and I are not terribly tall, but these bikes were tiny, and we had the seat posts extended as far as we could.
Oh, wow.
But so, and it was really lucky they were electric assist because our knees were not happy. Ooh, yeah. And they had three gears. The path we were on was pretty flat, but being alongside a river, now and then had some little steep pinches you get going up back to the road or down. And so, yeah, had a short ride. I think we did about 25 Ks before deciding our knees had had enough. But a really nice way to explore the area. Definitely next time want to make sure we book some proper bikes and go a bit further, because the river had, you know, some great bird hides. A lot of it's been renaturalized. Yep. You know, rivers in Japan can be fairly industrial, just like here, but possibly even more so. And there's some salmon farms if we'd been able to go further, a nice bay, you know, lots of little places to explore. So, yeah, it was a fun way to check things out, or a little uncomfortable.
but a lot of reward for a small amount of... I remember hiring a bike from a, I'm not going to go into this too deeply, from a station in the Netherlands to ride to a very nice museum, and the only bike they had was way too big. Oh my God, here we go.
Did you know I saw that photo your social media, Faith, and I actually thought you had like little fold up Bromptons or something going on there. I didn't realise.
It was, and that was with the seat post, like, it was this, you know, it was way beyond what it should have been, but, yeah.
To the listener and the audience out there, you couldn't see the vision that Faith just showed us. I want you to imagine somebody riding a bicycle into the big top, the circus bike, small wheels, yes. Somebody perched way above it, a feat of engineering balance.
Imagine John Cleese on a...
on a Brompton.
BMX.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Ron's much better looking than John Cleese.
That's why I said imagine.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Alison, have you got something to share with
wow,
us?
Wow, what a great story. Yeah,
this is not a competition.
No. Well, I do. I have a good story. I'm St Kilda based, and I ride every day into the city and back, of course, for work. And then the other day I ran into a work colleague on the way, Justin, and he rides a cargo bike. He had his child and his dog. Fantastic. We meet up. You don't get to do that otherwise, right? Well, g'day. So he drops Alex off to school, so I join in the journey. Then he said, oh, let's ride through the golf course. I'm like, what are you talking about? I've lived in that area for nearly two decades. And that morning, he takes me around the back of Jurassic Park, the mini golf course, and we go through the middle of the golf course.
There we go.
There's a beautiful path.
Wow.
Through the middle of it.
Yeah.
A little bit of gravel there. So, you know, nice. If you've got your road bike in the morning, probably not ideal. It's a public road through the middle of the golf course. And it delivers you right on the other side of the park to where the high school is there on the corner, and it's absolutely stunning. It's got tree canopies. You're riding amongst. It's like you're in the country. Blow me away. And so for the past week, I've been riding down there. Proud as punch. This morning I'm rolling down. Oh, I'm winning. That'll keep me entertained for 6 months.
But there's always – that's the thing with bike riding. There are these little sort of secret ways to move around. And once you discover them, like, it is part of that experience. It's just so much nicer.
Oh, it's absolutely – I can't take the smile off my face going down this. It's been there the whole time.
The best routes are the ones you haven't ridden yet.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So, you know, if you're there, have a look. Go through the golf course. Amazing.
There we go. Never go past those turns. You keep going past. That's what that whole thing is, you know. Take a risk. Go that way. And then actually show somebody.
Yeah. So, you know. Go in the car park. Go around Jurassic Park mini golf and you'll discover this amazing part.
Especially when I think that's how I discovered the Brunswick Shimmy just after it started being developed, the East Brunswick Shimmy. You had your route to somewhere, and I thought, why are all the cyclists always turning down there? Like, I go here to get to where I want to go. And after one day you think, I'm just going to follow. Why are so many cyclists turn down that road that doesn't go anywhere? And then you discover it leads to this whole other route.
No one's using it, so get in there, get in there. But don't take a Lime bike, because there's one little other bit to the story. That morning I happened to be riding a Lime bike. I don't know why. So often, you know, your bikes end up all over the place. And it goes into that turtle mode on the path. So, because there's a little turtle on the line by, and I shouldn't be using the brand, but then it just all slows down and you can't go
fast.
Oh, it gets
in a geofenced
area. So I was actually running along this path like... He's on an e-cargo park. And I'm like, but so just take, you know, a non-geofenced
bike. Yeah. I was wondering with the bikes in Sapporo, I thought, are these geofenced? Because we're headed out of town. Yeah. And, you know, I couldn't find anything online or on the bike's website about them. But, yeah, it was kind of waiting to get halfway down the river and discover that we're going to have to do it with our knees.
There you go. I've got a good orthopaedic surgeon if you need help. Look, obviously, we're 10 minutes in. I'll give a trigger warning here. This has got a bit of bicycle history nerdism about it, so be it. We often get a lot of, well, at Second Chance Cycles, one of the main provider of used bikes is Bikes for Humanity, which I must admit must be coming up to nearly 25 years in Melbourne. Yeah. Their anniversary must be coming up soon. And look, and it's usually, I mean, as an overview, they're usually old 80s, 90s road bikes, you know, or banged up mountain bikes, although not mountain bikes, step throughs and stuff like that, that they can't send to Africa. Anyway, in a load a couple of weeks ago, I noticed this thing coming off, Italian name on the frame, really nice colour. Mm. I'm looking at it, I'm going, ooh, that's a bit unusual. Anyway, I put it up in the stand and I'm originally looking at it and it had a rack and all those pump things and stuff like that. So I'm starting to strip it, you know. And I stop at some point when I see there are a couple of features to it. And obviously it's got a Made in Milan sticker on it. So I'm going, ooh, anyway. Take it off the stand, put it away inside. When I get home that night, I start to do a little bit of research on it. It's a famous Italian brand, of course, that then became Bianchi. So there's a long history of Coppi, Bartoli all rode their bikes in Tour de France. One of them on Tour de France. It was a huge bicycle in Italy right from the 30s all the way through to the 60s, maybe early 70s. Anyway, so I'm just going to describe this bike. It's interesting because it's one of the first time, and Bianchi then kept it going, all the bikes they made were one colour.
Yeah.
And if you can imagine this light green with the sort of silver through it, it's really quite a imaginative and beautifully blended paint colour. So it really pops out at you. So anyway, I stopped stripping it, of course. And one of the volunteers then started polishing up and we realised how nice a bike it was under this. So we cleaned it up and stuck it on the wall. Now, fast forward a couple of months, one of our lovely volunteers, Tom, who he and his partner, wife, are in Europe doing a couple of long-distance rides that they've qualified here. They're going through the bike museum in Milan. Tom sends me this photo of this Legano bike sitting in the Milan Bicycle Museum. I said to him, I'm not sure whether to laugh or cry. One comes in the Second Chance Cyclist hard rubbish, and there's one sitting in a museum. So just in case you're worried, the bike did not get stripped. Lovely bloke from Peloton Cycles up in Burwood Road bought it from us. We sold it to him for, you know, a reasonable one. He actually then has gone to town and really cleaned it up, and it's sitting in the front window of his bicycle shop for everybody else to see. It's got everything. A little bit of history, but then, you know, I can imagine somebody's grandson or granddaughter emptying out grandpa's shed and looking at it going, oh, you know, this is nothing. So it's not, you know, it's not a deliberate thing, but just this funny thing that this whole story can end up with the two do exactly the same outcome in a way, which is nice, you know. Anyway, that's the story of the Italian bicycle. We've got a little bit of news, which we're going to do now.
Yep, let's do it quickly.
Okay. If you've ever want to ride a bicycle lane that actually goes from quite dangerous and spooky to safe in the space of one crossing, ride Wellington Street from one end to the other. By the time you get to Johnson Street, if you're heading north, it's lovely. As soon as you cross Johnson Street, it's a take your life in your own hand. What are we doing about it, Faith?
Well, there's consultation open at the moment with the City of Yarra. It's open for 2 weeks, so 2 weeks today.
13th of October.
And they're looking at designs to improve the sections that aren't so good. So really important to jump online and have a look and have your say, because it's an important connection, not just for people who live in Yarra. If you live in Darabin or Merribeck, then, you know, there's a good chance, if you need to end up in the east of the city, that you might be using Wellington Street. I remember the gasp from Val. It's 10 years ago now. I remember when at the Squeaky Wheel we were doing confidence courses for women riding for the City of Yarra, and Wellington Street was one of the biggest barriers to anyone using their bike. As soon as they needed to head in that north-south direction, it's, if you're over that side of the city, there's no alternative.
No.
So an important road to get right.
Yeah.
Really important connection. It has, cyclists are grossly overrepresented in crashes. They're a small percentage of users. There's over 2,000 a day, but in total traffic, make up 20% of those injured in crashes on Wellington Street, more than any other.
Well, those stats alone are enough to action that, right?
I mean,
it just, that statistic right there, you change that end of Wellington Street, and it's a game changer.
Yeah.
Not only for safety, but it'll get more people riding that.
It just opens it up to so many more people. You know, if you that thing where you have a route that has a really safe section, but even if it's short, if there's one section that is too scary, too dangerous, you don't ride. And Wellington Street, you know, there's a lot of kids trying to move north and south along there to get to schools. You know, Fitzroy High School has a campus they share with Collingwood College. There's other schools in Collingwood. And I know when my son was going to Fitzroy High School, once you got into the year 11 and 12, kids who had been riding to school all through high school, suddenly their parents stopped them because that journey down Wellington Street wasn't safe.
Yeah.
And the school, you know, they had to go down and wait for a bus and waste hours in that waiting mode. So it's a real deal breaker when there's a section like that that doesn't feel safe to people.
Yeah. And look, just easy to do. Go to the Yarra website, Yarra, and you've got options. Look at the options, vote for the option. Every time there's an option, vote on these things. Cyclists, we seem to be pretty good at actually picking the right one and making sure that we vote for it. Streets Alive are on board. All the other local groups are on board. Sophie Wade, the local council, is very much pushing this. Time to get on, time to finish it, actually. We should be able to finish this the same time we finish the Gibb Street Bridge.
Yeah. Well, that's going to happen this year. The
25
end of this
years.
Year.
Here we go.
And that's it. Wellington Street, the Yarra site, does say it's been 10 years in the making. So why does it take 10 years to create a safe route?
And it is so important to get on board, isn't it? I mean, I think people underestimate the submission and just get on there and do it. It'll take you 5 to 10 minutes, but your voices are so important for everyone in behind campaigning.
Okay, we're going to be back right after this.
Yarrabug would like to thank Bicycle Network for their financial support. Bicycle Network, a not-for-profit with 45,000 members, working to get more people riding for their health and well-being. Bicycle Network is proud to sponsor the Yarrabug program and support its important advocacy for safer and more accessible riding. By becoming a Bicycle Network member and or participating in one of their iconic riding events, you're supporting Bicycle Network's Ride to School programs and advocacy campaigns to make it easier for everyone to ride a bike every day. Visit bicyclenetwork.com.au for more information.
And you're back listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show, fittingly, after that sponsor announcement with Alison McCormack, the CEO of Bicycle Network. We haven't left ourselves much time, but we did want to catch up with you today because it's Bicycle Network's 50th year.
I know, 50 years. It's what an incredible milestone. And, you know, here we are just setting it up for another 50, really. Yeah. And that's really the direction I'm trying to head. So it's just wonderful to have this milestone in place and just stop and take a moment to look back at the history of Bicycle Network, where it came from and where it is today.
And it's, I mean, it started as quite a small, pretty grassroots advocacy, like some really, there were some really influential people involved in creating Bicycle Institute of Victoria, yeah, as it was then. But, yeah, it's grown into, especially over the last couple of years, quite a modern organisation.
Yeah, so the origins go back. Brian Dixon, who actually passed away this year, you know, over 200 games for Melbourne Football Club. What a man. So he was the equivalent of the, I guess, Sport Recreation Victoria.
What Melbourne, we'd call him a Renaissance man. Plays football and rides a bike. Opposite spectrums.
And started the Life Beginner campaign.
There we go. Yes.
Just was into fitness and health and making sure that our society was exercising out there, enjoying the outdoors. And so he was really one of the instigators of starting up the Bicycle Institute of Victoria, as it was there. And Ted Parker was the first president of the Bicycle Institute of Victoria, and it started there, and it was very grassroots. And, in fact, we've gone through and collated the whole 50 years encyclopedia of all of the different newspapers right through to the modern day, right on, which we've relaunched. And it's been just incredible. I've been stuck in all of these editions, reading all of the history, but nothing's changed.
I know.
You know, well, things have changed. Of course they have changed. But we are still here advocating for the same things. And I think we really need to start looking at those two comparisons. And there's periods of times where things got done. And what were those periods of time? But it's an incredible, rich history. 50 years is a long time.
Yeah.
And those people, I mean, you'll have to put Keith Dunstan, Charlie
Farron.
When you're saying grassroots, the great story of Sunday afternoon, and somebody runs across Charlie Farron with a shovel filling in potholes on the Yarra Trail. Yeah. So when you're talking about grassroots organisation, the interesting thing is they're all high-profile people. And it was, you know, it was quite a push. Didn't show up much, though. Even I can remember, it really didn't. Cyclists dying roads just kept going up. I mean, you've got to remember the times. There was no breathalysers, all these sort of things. Mm. So it was really quite inherently dangerous. Anyway, 50 years, still going strong.
It's still going strong, and a lot of achievements over those years. And that's why I've bringing things back, like the ride-on is back. And this ride-on, which is the member magazine, is celebrating 50 years. So the front cover looks incredible. It's the 50, and it's almost 3D, and it's got all the different covers of the 50 years of the editions in it. And it is just amazing. But fundamentally, you know, we're an advocacy organisation. And they're our roots, and that's what we're here to do, to get more people riding bikes, to make it a healthier place.
Yep.
Of course, there's other wonderful benefits like the climate, et cetera, and they all go hand in hand, your hip pocket. But that's what we're here to do. So it's a really good moment for us to sit and say, well, this is us, you know, and we need to make sure that that is how we are portrayed and that is what we do every day. And everything we do goes to that North Star, to getting more people riding bikes, and that's that's a shift, I think.
Yeah, and that's an interesting idea. Like, it is a moment where you can sit and think, okay, who are we? What do we do? What is important? And maybe something that in the previous 10 years some people felt was a bit lost, like it, that finding that direction again. and the reconnection with the grassroots, with the bugs and that, that's also, you know, part of defining, okay, how do we do this as an organisation?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't do it alone. That's that's fundamentally the entire board, our entire team. You know, it's a collaborative approach. There is absolutely no way you can go alone on this stuff. And, you know, at the grassroots level, who knows every local pothole on the road? You know, no. It's the people who ride that route every day, you know, so you can't be, you know, that's Charlie's filling her potholes in, you're filling your potholes in, Val, you're over on your side.
Well, I ride the road, same route religiously the whole time, but I notice small changes. So that's, there actually can be a benefit from riding the same route all the time. Hey, listen, on the ride in here, six cargo bikes. Two of the, only two out of the six ridden by women, I've got to say, but one of the others, a commercial operation. This is a game changer. Critical mass the other week, I'm going to say 60% female on the ride.
Yeah.
And of those, electric bikes, childcare carriers, children along for the ride. This demographic has changed.
Oh, it's a game changer. The e-bike and the cargo bike is an absolute game changer. I mean, we're seeing it all the time. You go north side, I mean, it's you don't even blink an eye.
No.
Come south side, I ride a cargo bike a little bit, and it's like, oh, it's becoming more common. You know, you're not as like, you still get a lot of smiles and it's different. Look at the lady riding the cargo bike. But it's changing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then so it's, and in a short period of time. So,
so quick.
It is incredible. You can legitimately get rid of all of those short trips that we talk about continuously. 50% of car trips in Victoria are under 4.2 kilometres, like the cargo bike is a game changer. You can carry your shopping, you can, you know, not have to worry about getting home from work. It's incredible, and we're seeing huge change. A lot of people say to us, how do I get on one? What's the price? What does it feel like? All of those tick boxes that you need just to get on a bike. So we are putting on a free e-bike expo this Saturday. Brunswick Velodrome. And Mary Beckbug will be there, which will be absolutely awesome. And with the Brunswick Cycling Club, you can come down. Heaps of different brands will be there, all different types of cargo bikes from, you know, your lug and carry where you can have a subscription to purchasing to 99 bikes, but all legitimate e-bikes that would fit an e-bike definition, most importantly. But you can see all the different price points. Come just in a safe environment, no intimidation to buy. You can just come on down and see what the fuss is all about.
Yeah, I'm going to say I remember first selling, I think they were Gazelles, must have been about 2007 or something like that, or six. You know, you couldn't actually line up four or five of them and ride them and compare them. And the cargo bikes are quite a significant investment.
Yeah.
This way of doing it, go along to Brunswick Velodrome, even if you don't buy one, try them all. You'll realise that some of these things can actually change the way you live your life.
It's they're great. I remember in the early 2000s at my son's primary school, every mum had a cargo bike, but they were the Christianas not electric.
Horrible, the ride.
And it was fine for your short trips around Brunswick. It was flat. But as soon as you needed to go somewhere where there was one of those pinchier hills or it was, they were really, so I think that's why it stayed such a little bubble. Because you couldn't move out of that sort of area too much. They were quite tricky to ride. But we still see some of them. Loaf of bread, still see there.
Yeah, still going one on. That's one of the critical mass. On Friday, I heard somebody ask him, what do they like to ride? I said, it's the worst bike I've ever ridden. Well, no electric assist. It's interesting, and part of the batteries have changed.
Yes.
I can remember selling that Gazelle. The battery nearly cost more than the bike itself.
Yeah.
It's about $2,000.
All that technology is
catching
up.
$2,000 for the battery, you know, in those days.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, we're getting close.
Alison,
we're going to look forward to seeing you in 6 months.
Oh, of course.
But before that, on Saturday at the e-bike expo, because last year it was so much fun, even as someone who wasn't there to try out e-bikes, there were hundreds and hundreds of people turned up, and the atmosphere was, it was just really good. Like, everyone was just really happy trying all these different bikes. Having people were coming out and chatting to us. They were just having a ball.
And people came far and wide, and it was people who aren't riding bikes currently were saying, I wanted to come and try one. I've been meaning to buy one for 5 years.
Yeah. It's a really big investment if you don't know what they're like. So come and try them.
Absolutely.
You have to try very hard not to have fun on a bicycle, is what I'm always saying.
Yeah.
That's all we've got time for this week. Chris will be back next week talking about Wellington Street again and keeping that program going. Next up is, I think it's a little bit of a mix-up from 3CRs.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.